Hi, you're listening to a podcast brought to you by the teaching team at New Life in North Lincolnshire. New Life is committed to helping transform people and transform places through the love and power of Jesus Christ. We hope you, in some small way, will be blessed and transformed by this message.
Good morning. Russ just told me off because I sniffed and my microphone was on. I do apologise. How's everybody doing today? All right, this side sounds all right. This side? All good. For those that don't know, my name is Dina and I'm one of the pastors here at New Life. It's my privilege to be able to share with you just for a few moments this morning. I'm quite glad that I'm preaching here because I'm conscious that the baptism tank is full of water. And I think I'll just stay in this first bit rather than walking over there. I wonder if any of you have ever been or maybe seen in an airport when you return home from somewhere, people there ready to welcome you home. It's often a scene we see in films, isn't it, where people have got the big banners and the balloons and the family there, and it kind of cuts to the person leaving the plane and the family in the airport. It's like this slow-mo, chariots of fire running, you can hear the music, and it's just this big, joyous reunion and reuniting of a family who have been away. I've had that happen to me once, just on a very small scale. Before me and Mark were married, I'd been away with my family somewhere, and as a surprise, Mark in his teeny tiny little white Fiesta had kind of chugged all the way to East Midlands Airport. And as I came out of the, arrivals, that makes sense. He was stood there with a bunch of flowers waiting for me. It was a very sweet, romantic moment. It's only happened that once, mind, but hey-ho. But what a feeling to know that somebody is there just for you. Somebody's there to welcome you home. Somebody cares enough about you to make that effort to come and just make that reunion, that arriving home so special. And there's a story in the Bible where something quite similar happened. It's possibly a well-known story to many of you. If you've been around church any length of time, this will be a well-known story. But I'm conscious today it might be the first time that you've heard it. So just to set a little bit of context, it's a story that, when the story is told, Jesus was going around on the earth and he was teaching people and he was performing miracles. And he was basically just spending time with the people, meeting the people where they were at. And the Bible tells us that Jesus welcomed everybody. And that everybody included people on the fringes of society. The people who wouldn't generally be welcomed by the masses. Tax collectors who were despised. Sinners. People who were just maybe not all that nice. But Jesus welcomed everybody. And what would happen is Jesus would begin to teach the people, begin to tell them about the kingdom of God, begin to tell them about the way they should live. And these sinners, these tax collectors, the Bible calls them notorious sinners. They would listen in and they would be part of that group listening to Jesus. And the religious leaders, the Pharisees, the teachers of religious law, did not like that Jesus welcomed these people, that Jesus accepted these people. In fact, it says that Jesus goes one step further, and he didn't just welcome them in this large public crowd, but actually he ate with them. So Jesus even ate with the sinners. And so the Pharisees and the religious leaders of the law are just beginning to murmur and complain. Who does Jesus think he is? Mixing and mingling with the lowest of the low. Why is he eating with them? And they just got really hacked off at Jesus, at what he was doing. And so in response to their complaining and their murmuring and their muttering, Jesus tells some stories. And the stories that he tells are to illustrate the immeasurable, extravagant love of God and to contrast that with the exclusivity of the Pharisees, how they just wanted the right people in the crowd. They just wanted the right people. And so Jesus tells some stories. And one such story is titled The Lost Son or The Prodigal Son. And it's found in the book of Luke chapter 15. So we're going to read that together now. Luke chapter 15. It says, to illustrate the point further, the point of God's love as compared to the Pharisaical exclusiveness, Jesus told him this story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all his money in wild living. About the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him, but no one gave him anything. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant.'" So he returned home to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy of being called your son." But his father said to the servants, "Quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet. And kill the calf we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and has now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found." And so the party began. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. When he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house, and he asked one of the servants, "What's going on?" "Your brother's back," he was told, "and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return." The older brother was angry and wouldn't go in. His father came out and begged him, but he replied, "All these years I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. And in all that time, you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf." His father said to him, "Look, dear son, you've always stayed by me. Everything I have is yours. We had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, but now he is found." Let's just take a minute to pray. Father God, I thank you for your word. I thank you that there is truth that was applicable when it was written, but it's truth that has come through the ages. And I pray that as I speak now, that you will speak through me, that Jesus, you will illuminate what needs illuminating, and that we'll have ears to hear what you want to say and hearts that are ready to respond to you. In your name I ask this. Amen. So there's so much going on in this story, so many different facets we could pull out. You know, the older brother is symbolic of the Pharisees because he was angry that this son who had been wayward had come back. But for today, in the light of my message been titled "Welcome Home," I want to look at the younger son and the response of his father. So at the very start of this story, what the younger son did was both outrageous and quite hurtful, because basically what he was saying to his dad was, I wish you were dead now, because I want what's coming to me. The inheritance is going to be mine when you've gone. I want it now." That's a pretty hurtful thing to say to somebody, to say to your father. And in Middle Eastern culture at that time, it was a very shameful thing to do, for him to actually go to his father and make such a request. And it was especially unusual for the inheritance to go to the younger child before it went to the eldest one. And yet, the father agrees to his request, and he gives him his share of the inheritance that is going to become his at some point in the future. And what I want us to note is that the son was not planning on coming back. He wasn't just planning on going on his jollies, on a bit of a jaunt, living a little bit and then coming home. It says that a few days later, this younger son packed all of his belongings and moved to a distant land. He had no intention of returning. He was taking his money, cutting and running. I wonder what his father must have felt as a dad, as a parent, seeing your son make an unwise choice, knowing this is not going to end well. And yet he gives him what he asked for and off he goes. And now he's got his money and his freedom, and he basically goes off and squanders all that he has and what the Bible calls wild living. Now, I'm sure we're all mature enough in the room today to fill in the blanks of what that wild living would consist of. But what a waste. Here he had the opportunity, he had the finance to do whatever he wanted with his life, and he simply squanders it. He wastes it. What a mess, what a position to be in. But I wonder how many of us have ever felt like that in life. Maybe we've not literally squandered hundreds of thousands of pounds, although that can happen. But maybe we feel when we look back on our life that we've squandered our time, or we've wasted opportunities, or we've squandered our gifts and the talents that we had. We've maybe had opportunities to do good, but we let them pass by and we chose a different path. Maybe you feel that if you look back on your life, you can identify with that younger son that actually, yeah, I've made a pretty big mess up of my life. I've made some really rubbish decisions. Well, if that is you this morning, and you feel that I could identify with him, he squandered stuff, I also feel that. Well, I've got good news for you, because your story doesn't have to end there. You don't have to stay in the mess that you feel you're in. You don't have to stay in that position of, I've just squandered so much, I've just wasted so much. But let's keep on going with the story to see what happens next. I wonder if you've ever done something you felt guilty about. Anybody ever done anything they feel guilty about or ashamed of? Thank you, Andrew, you and me, hands straight up there. I realized when I was preparing this, what I'm about to admit to, nobody knows. This is a bit of a dangerous thing, isn't it? But when I have two children, and when they were younger, well, every Christmas really, but they get given so much chocolate and so many sweets. Parents, yeah, so much. And I'm a lady who likes chocolate. And so they used to have, I'm really sorry, son, I'm really sorry. They used to have these sacks, and we put all their sweets and chocolate in. And I'm always trying to eat healthy, and I don't buy chocolate in because, you know, I try not to eat too much. But it used to be that while I would put theirs out, or Easter egg chocolate, beautiful, the best kind of chocolate. And so it'd be some for Micah's bowl, some for George's bowl, or some for Mama, some for Micah's. And I did feel a little bit guilty, but probably not guilty enough to stop me doing it again. So, son, I'm really sorry, but your chocolate and sweets used to shrink down because of me. But we've all done stuff, haven't we, that we probably feel a little bit guilty of or a little bit ashamed. And I guarantee if I was to say to you guys, okay, next Sunday, instead of us celebrating Easter, come to church and we're going to play the video of your life or my life. So all those things that you've done that you think, I would never want anybody to know that. Next Sunday, big screen, we're having a big cinematic showing of your life. That would make for some pretty uncomfortable viewing, wouldn't it? Because all those things that we think, oh, I wish I hadn't done that, I hope nobody ever finds out, the choices we've made, the times we've made the wrong choice, the times we've hurt people, it wouldn't make for pretty viewing. And I mentioned there about guilt and shame, and often we tend to use them as interchangeable terms. Well, I felt guilty about that, I felt, you know, ashamed of that. But actually, scientists and psychologists define guilt and shame as two very different feelings. Guilt is a feeling you get when you did something wrong, like stealing your children's chocolate and sweets. But shame is a feeling that is about you as a person, that you are a bad person because you did that. So guilt would say, I'm a good person, but I did something wrong. Whereas shame would say, I'm a bad person who does bad things. And there's a huge, huge difference. So for example, if you were distracted whilst driving and you accidentally went through a red light and had a near miss with a pedestrian, guilt's response would be, oh my goodness, I'm an awful, I totally messed up there, I need to be more careful and I need to work on not getting more distracted. You realise what you've done is wrong. Whereas shame's response would be, Oh my goodness, I'm an awful driver, I'm a horrible person, I shouldn't be allowed to drive, I shouldn't even be allowed to go to work. And when we feel feelings of guilt, that can be quite a helpful thing because it stops us doing behaviours that are not good for us or harmful to us. But when we feel shame, they're feelings that we get, not just about what we've done, but about who we are. And shame affects the value that we place in ourselves. And for this younger son, he has gone, he's wasted everything, he's squandered everything, and he's at a low point. And I guarantee, not only would he have felt guilty for what he asked his father, but there would be feelings of shame what have I done? Who have I become? And we read that the famine comes in the land. He's got no money. He begins to starve. And he manages to find a job with a local farmer who sends him into the field to feed the pigs. But this really is now for him, for a Jewish man to have to associate with pigs. They were ceremonially unclean animals. They were forbidden. And here he is, nothing left to show for his life, in a field feeding pigs. What a position to be in. We read that he was so hungry, even the pods he was feeding them looked good, but no one gave him anything to eat. He would have felt ashamed of who he was and what he'd done. He'd gone from being a son with a promised inheritance to now being a runaway disgrace with nothing. His squandering had led him to this position of shame. And as he looked at himself, and as he thought back to what life used to be like, I wonder how much he wished he could turn back time. How much he wished he could go back and never have asked that question. How much he wished he could undo what he'd done. And again, I wonder in the room this morning how true that may be of us. In the room that we look back and we wish we hadn't done that. I wish I could undo that decision. I wish I could go back to that time. I wish I could undo the choices that I made. Maybe we haven't made such a colossal mess of our lives as this younger son had, but maybe there's stuff that we look at and think, I just wish I could turn back the time and undo those things. The song we sang this morning, it started with the lines, I was buried beneath my shame. Who could carry that kind of weight? It was my tomb. It just enslaved me till I met you, Jesus. And shame is a weight that holds us down. And we read of this son in verse 17. It says, when he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare. And here I am, dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant. So this son, this boy, this man who's made such a huge mess of his life, realizes actually, what am I doing? Back home, even the servants have better treatment than I have here. Even the servants have food to eat. He recognizes, because of what I've done, because of who I've become, I am no longer worthy to be called my father's son. But maybe, just maybe, if I go back, I might be able to be taken on as a hired servant, to live within the vicinity of the family, even if I don't deserve a seat at the table. And so that's what he does. From this place of squandering everything, from this pit of shame, he goes back home to face the consequences of his actions. I said at the start that this story is often titled The Lost Son, or The Two Brothers, or The Prodigal Son. But with what's about to happen, I actually think that it'd be much better titled The Love of the Father. Because after coming to his senses, the son sets off home, and we read this, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. This son who has squandered everything, this son who brought shame on his family, this son who is just a mess, comes home, and his father just lavishly embraces him. He kisses him. He runs to him. What a picture. What a transformational moment. And in those days, for a man to run was not culturally acceptable. And men over usually around the age of 40 would not run, because he would have had to hitch up his robe. But this father didn't care. And he would have been breathless. It says he saw his son coming a long way off, and he ran. This wasn't just a gentle, oh, there he is. Hi, son, welcome home. This is, I have clocked my son, and I am running because I want to embrace him. I want to get there before anybody else gets him. I want to get to him before the villagers maybe despise him even more and tell him to go home, because this is my son, and he has come home. What a scene. What a truly transformational moment in that boy's life, from a place of mess to a place of embrace. And he says to his father, Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you. I am not worthy of being called your son. But his father says, quick, bring the best robe in the house and put it on him. Get him a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf. We must celebrate, because this son of mine was dead and is now alive. He was lost, but now he is found. And from a place of squander, from a place of shame, this boy now enters into a place of sonship. You know, the father probably had every right to disown him and say, no, you made your bed, you lie in it. You've taken your inheritance, you squandered it, now go. And yet he chooses welcome. And he chooses embrace. And each of the things that he was given was significant. The robe signified distinction. It was reserved for guests of honor, yet it was placed on him, this shamed son. The ring signified authority and allowed him to do business transactions. So his father was saying, this is a man of integrity. This is a man of honor. And the shoes signified sonship, because only slaves went barefooted. Each item, a sign of position and acceptance. What a welcome. What a homecoming. You know, this son was welcomed home, not as a disappointment, but as a son. Embraced, welcomed in the family. He was given a second chance, a fresh start. And the father doesn't accept the son's offer of living life less than a son. It doesn't matter where he's been or what he's done. This is my son. And for those who are getting baptized in a few minutes, the journey that they've been on is recognizing that just like that son who tried living life his own way away from his father and the mess it got him in, they have come and said, Jesus, with all the mess and all our baggage, we're bringing it to you. And we want to follow after you and choose new life in you. My message this morning is entitled, Welcome Home. And that's what I want to invite you guys to do today, to come home. Maybe you feel you've made a mess of your life. Maybe you feel there are things that if only you could undo, you would. And yet you're here in your mess. Come home. Maybe you feel you've squandered your gifts or your talents or your time or your opportunity. Maybe you feel like you need a fresh start. Come home. If you feel not just guilty, but the shame of who you are and eats away at your value of yourself, and you think, I am not worthy, listen, the Father stands and says, come home. You're my son, you're my daughter. Come home. If, like the younger son, you feel as though everything is a mess and you are at that lowest point, come home. And I want to tell you that when you come home, and I don't just mean to this community, this building, as beautiful as our church is, I mean come to Jesus. Come home. Because when you do, there is not condemnation. There is not judgment. There is not, well, you deserve this. It's come home, my son. Come home, my daughter. You are so loved. He greets us with compassion, with love, and with embrace, ready to clothe you with love, with acceptance, with grace, with kindness. The invitation this morning is come home. Welcome home. Because it's only in him that we find true freedom, true forgiveness, true new life in Jesus.
Thanks for listening to this message from New Life in North Lincolnshire. To find out more, do visit us online at newlifechurch.uk, or why not pay us a visit? We'd love to see you.